Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Yvonne Jones' life took a horrifying turn when she began a relationship with an abusive man. She had no idea that it would cost her a 7-year prison term and the life of her young son. Each year, between 600,000 to 6 million women are physically abused. That means 1 in every 4 women. Many feel so overwhelmed by the abuse that instead of taking action, they allow the horror to spill over to their children. Because they feel helpless and don't know where to turn, they often operate in avoidance or denial, thinking, hoping, and praying the nightmare will end. Be assured, it will not. Today, Yvonne is here to tell her story in the hopes that it will give others the courage to walk away from a destructive relationship. Her book, A Time to Heal, is available on our website or through Amazon. You can contact her at YvonneJonesBooks.com. Yvonne, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yvonne, your story is a powerful example of just how destructive domestic violence can be. In your case, it cost you the life of your son and sent you to prison for 7 years. Can you start us out by sharing how you found yourself in this kind of abusive relationship?
I think it all started, one of my greatest desires in life was to be a housewife and a mother. And, you know, you have dreams in life, and the bad thing about dreams is sometimes we get in too big a hurry to make those dreams reality. And I grew up with a low self-esteem pretty much all of my life, being overweight. And got in too big a hurry to get married. You know, felt like the only person that I was going to be able to get married to was the first guy I came along with that paid any attention to me, you know. So I got married to the first guy that I met, that I dated. And the relationship, even though we worked hard at it, ended up not working. And, you know, having a low self-esteem like that and then coming out of that kind of a relationship, I had begun to lose weight. I'd lost like 85 pounds. I began to feel good about myself. So, going from one transaction to another, you know, here you are, 1 minute you're low self-esteem, you're in this marriage, but then all of a sudden you got people paying attention to you like you never had before. And I grew up very sheltered. I never was around people a whole lot when I was growing up. I never went out on dates or anything. I never even went to a movie theater till I was like 16 or 17, and that was with my brothers.
Mm.
But when I met this guy, which is so easy to do, and people don't realize that it's so easy to get involved with people like this. And I don't know, but for some reason, those type of men can target a woman who is vulnerable, a woman who is passive, and I've always been a passive person, too. And those type of men can always seem to target that type of person. And from the first moment that I laid eyes on this guy, he took one look at me, and he started with the flattering words. And you know, the Bible says to beware of those with a froward mouth and a flattering tongue. And so that was the first thing that attracted me to him was, here I have, all my life I've been with low self-esteem and not having that many people pay attention to me, and all of a sudden this guy's paying a lot of attention to me.
Sure.
Not only him, but a lot of other guys as well were beginning to notice me. And I think that's where it first began.
So it kind of sucked you in to have somebody just pay a lot of attention to you and think you were great and pretty and all of that.
Yes. And he just, I mean, he would keep coming by my register. My heart skips a beat every time you walk through. And he was quite a bit older than me, so that was one thing I was a little bit antsy about at first. But he treated me like a queen. I had never been treated this way before.
Like, and what would he do?
Flowers, candlelight dinners, roses every night, steak dinners after work. I would go by there. Of course, you know how it is when you're, and I think more at first it was more of a big infatuation. I thought I was in love, but it was an infatuation. I'd never been in this type of a relationship before. And here you have your country music, love videos playing on TV, and he's looking into your eyes, massaging your shoulders, you know, and just sucking you in, mm-hmm. pretty much. Never did ask anything about any sexual relations, never made any kind of advances in that way. Told me that I was the woman that he had been looking for all of his life. He played the guitar, I played the piano, he was in church, and, you know, he just poured it on like I was just the best thing that had ever happened to him. In my heart and in my mind, that's what I'm thinking, you know, wow, this is amazing. I play the piano at church, and he plays the guitar, we both sing, so, I mean, it's sounding really good here, you know.
So you didn't see any signs of abuse or a temper or anger at all for this first, say, month or so that you were dating him?
No, ma'am, I sure didn't. I began to get sucked in there real good, and the more I got to know him, the more he got to know my family a little bit, spend a little time with them. My mother was constantly calling when I would go by there because I began to act a little bit different.
How so?
Before I met him, I was very attentive with my son. I mean, very attentive with my son. My son was my life, and I never let him out of my sight. I was a very good mother. I took the very best of care of him, and I made sure that I was home to be with him every time I went to work. I never even worked until I separated from my first husband. I stayed at home, and I was a stay-at-home mom. I would start focusing all my time on him instead of coming home to be with my son. In the evenings, instead of going directly home, I'd go by his house. I'd stay there. I used to come home and say his prayers with him at night. And Mama would call, and she'd say, you know, Alan is getting to where he wants you to, you're stopping to say prayers with him at night. He's missing that. But it's like all I could focus on was this guy.
Hmm. And that was that because of the attention you just craved so much?
I think part of it was, and I think I had never been in this type of relationship before. I don't know. It's like it was just like I was drawn to him, and so it was a powerful. It's like I couldn't control it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was there, and I'd look into his eyes, and it just deep infatuation, and all of a sudden my everything began to change. About Daddy told me, he said, Yvonne, when you first met this guy, he said, you totally changed. He said, before you met him, he said, you always had your head up and you were smiling. He said, when you met him, your head was down and you stopped smiling. Now, you would have thought, being in the position of you look like you're happy, you're being treated like a queen, that you would always be smiling even more, you know, but I wasn't.
What do you think that was about?
I think back in my mind, I knew that probably this was not a good thing for me. I was confused. After my first husband and I separated, I had to move back in with my parents. And after you've been married for 8 years, you know, the last thing you want to do is have to move back in with your parents. And it made me feel like a child mm-hmm. all over again, you know, not being able to make decisions on my own. And I grew up like that, you know, feeling like everything I did in life was a mistake. I was always making mistakes. I was always trying to please Daddy. I was always trying to make him proud of me. And I wanted, for once in my life, to make a decision on my own. And all he did was feed on that. He could hear what I was saying, so he used that with my parents. You're never going to be able to grow up and get out of the house on your own because your parents are going to always be telling you what to do. You're going to always be a child. And he knew that's what I needed to hear. So that was the way he started trying to convince me that I needed to get out of that environment. At one point, I was listening to him, what he was saying, on the other end, my daddy's saying, Yvonne, don't even go have coffee with him.
So your parents kind of saw something that they didn't feel was right, even though the abuse hadn't started.
Daddy did. From the minute I started talking about him, and I started talking about the flattering words, and daddy said, Yvonne, don't even go have coffee with him. And I just didn't listen.
So when did the abuse first start? What happened? Did you see a temper? Did he hit you? What? Take us down that road.
He convinced me that the best thing for us would be to move away, which is usually one of the first things they do. They want to take you from your security, from your family environment, because those are the people who are going to be looking at you the most. They're the ones who are going to be able to tell the difference in your life that you have totally changed. So, and they'll be able to see most of the time that you are being abused or something's just not right. So he convinced me to move. We quit our jobs at Walmart and we moved to Shreveport, or actually Mansfield. And the first weekend, actually his daughter is the same age as me. So he was like 20 years older than I was. And we got over there. He had told me that he was a recovered alcoholic, which was should have been a very good sign from the beginning that I should have just quit, but I didn't. We got over there and we were staying in his daughter's trailer. They wanted us to run their business for them. They had like an equipment business. So his daughter said, well, why don't we go out and celebrate? They wanted to go to a bar. Well, I'd never been in a bar. I was 26 years old. I'd never been in a bar in my entire life. I didn't want to go. I didn't drink. But they wanted me to be the designated driver. So I went, and that night there was the first night that I saw the signs of abuse. Actually, he did abuse me that night. We were in there and they were drinking beer. I was drinking Coke. And he wanted me to dance with him. I was very uncomfortable. I'd never danced before. So I would dance the slow songs, but I wouldn't dance the fast songs. And he had just come and asked me to dance. And I had told him no because it was on a fast song. Then a slow song came up and another man came to ask me to dance. I had told the guy, I said, no, I really don't think I should because I told my boyfriend that we would just dance with each other. We decided we'd dance with each other. And he said, well, he's dancing with everybody in the room. So he convinced me to go ahead and dance with him. When I went to sit back down after the dance, that's when a slap came across my face. It knocked my glasses off my face. They flew across the room. He began to cuss me until a fly wouldn't light on me. And that's where it all started that night.
And what were you thinking? I mean, you must have been in shock.
I was. I'm thinking, how, you know, can this be such a beautiful thing all at once and then turn to be so horrible? How can something that seems so right be so wrong all of a sudden? You know, we're in a deal where he's singing gospel music, and how can something that seems so right be so wrong, and how did it change so fast, and what have I missed here? And
did he apologize to you after that or when you got home?
The next morning, he did not apologize. He did not apologize that next morning. It was a little while later on that evening, after he finally sobered up real well, that he finally did apologize, and he cried, and that's typically how
That's typical of the pattern, yes. So
yeah.
Was that typical of him after the abuse?
Yes, that was always typical of him. After the abuse, he would cry and beg me to, you know, not to leave him. It'll never happen again. I'm so sorry, you know.
Did you believe him, Yvonne?
I did.
At the beginning?
I did at the beginning. And after a while, it got to a point to where I knew that as long as he was drinking, that it was not going to stop. The drinking just made it worse. Now, there were times that he did hit me when he wasn't drinking. And I was really, at first I was shocked by that because I thought that it was just when he was drinking, but it wasn't. It turned out to be other times as well.
Did you tell yourself that things would get better?
I did.
Do you think, you know, did you believe it or were you deceiving yourself?
I was deceiving myself. I mean, you're looking at the good times because at some times he was so loving. You know, I'd have the affection, I'd have the love, I'd just have a wonderful feeling. And I felt like I was really in love with this guy. I'd never felt this way before in my life. Then all of a sudden he's abusing me. You know, and so you're focusing on the good times. That's what mostly you focus on. And I'm ashamed because here I've quit my job. I've moved away. I've disappointed my daddy once again, my family, which is something that I never wanted to do. And I've heard my daddy when I was living in with him, you know, that, you know, here we've got these other mouths to feed, and he had no idea I was even listening. Knowing that I was being a burden to him, too, kind of helped in me not going back, because I just didn't want to be a burden to him. I've always been a type person. If I get myself involved in something and I know that it's wrong, I'm bound and determined to either make it work or try to fix it. I'm a misfix-it kind of gal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always been that way. I think I can fix it, and I think there's a lot of women probably like that have that same mentality. I think I can fix it. And I just think, and I know that God can fix anything. So that's where immediately I go. Well, I know God can fix it. So.
Well, many women are ashamed and afraid to tell their story. So part of it for you was the shame that you felt, and that kept you in hiding. That kept you from telling. And then there's some beliefs that keep you from telling. So one of the things driving you was, okay, I don't want to be a burden. I'm going to be a burden if I go back home. Any other beliefs that you think you had? I mean, okay, you're a people pleaser, you're passive, you don't want to rock the boat. What were you believing about yourself, do you think, that kept you there?
I was believing, I think, that I was strong enough to take it.
Mm.
You know, that I could make it work. You know, that I was a child of God, and I could make it work. But at the same time, you know, I wasn't focusing on the fact that I'm separated from God right now, because sin separates you from God. I'm living with this guy, and he's not my husband. And, you know, so, but I had in my heart's mind that I can change this situation. I can make this better. I can stay here, and I can take this until God fixes him.
Mm.
And people, you know, I've always been that type. I keep believing, and I'll take abuse. I'll take things in my life, and that's just a bad thing. But in order to protect somebody else, or I think I'm protecting somebody else, I'll take it myself in order to keep somebody else from getting hurt.
Did you believe you couldn't get anybody else? Or was there a fear of being alone? A lot of women feel like, well, this is better than being by myself, or...
Well, yeah, part of it, too, and that's what they try to make you believe, is you'll never be able to find anybody else. I'm the only person that'll ever take care of you. I'm the only person that's ever going to love you. You know, and they try to convince you of all that stuff. But at the same time, you know, he was convincing me that, you know, you're going to go back home, and if you go back home, you're going to be living with your parents again, and they're going to be telling you what to do, and you're never going to grow up. And he said all the things that I needed to hear, and that's exactly how I felt, because I felt like a child. And I knew I was a grown woman, but I was feeling like a child, and I hated that feeling.
So you felt inadequate. You felt inadequate to run your own life, or inadequate to make decisions. And so he knew exactly what buttons to push, because part of that was true for you.
He did, yes. And he said all the right things.
When does a relationship become destructive? When does it start becoming destructive? The first hit?
Actually, he did begin to abuse me quite a bit after that first time. He began to start listening to my phone calls. I didn't know this at first until one day my mother happened to call, and I was talking to her. And right after the phone conversation, he came in. He was over at the office, which was directly across the street from our trailer. And he came in, and he started repeating all these things that my mother was saying on the phone. And so I knew then that he had been listening, and he was very angry because he said I didn't take up for him on the phone. My mother knew that something was not right, for the simple fact that me as a Christian, I was totally out of my character. I would have never, in my right mind, have left like that. So she knew that something was not right with me. And he heard the conversation between me and my mother, and he came over, and he was just really mad. And that's when he kicked me in the stomach. He kneed me in the stomach. That day, he kicked me in the leg with his boot. You know, it really got really bad that day. Well, I'm compromising, thinking that I can go back down here and I can talk to him and get this straight. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe he has changed. Maybe he's not going to be drinking anymore. So I tell my parents, you know, I'm going to leave Alan here because I'm coming back. I'm not going to stay. I'm just going to go down here. We're going to talk, and I'm going to let him know that I got to get this right in God's eyes. But I was only deceiving myself. I got there, and he convinced me to stay.
Mm.
And that became another whole deal. That's when I got pregnant.
So your motivation for staying, and, you know, I don't guess you can speak into why other women would do that, but your motivation to stay was you wanted to make it right in God's eyes. You thought you could really change this thing.
Yeah, I thought I could really change it. And then, you know, at the same time, here we are. I mean, we're singing gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to nursing homes. We're going to churches. We're singing gospel music. And, you know, I'm thinking, how can something that seems so right be so wrong?
Right.
You know, and so I was so confused. I mean, we were even drinking beer and singing gospel music at the same time. The God in me was showing in an odd sort of way. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, God was still there, and God was reflecting in my life, even around these people that were drunk. But while I was sitting there drinking a beer, you know, it was crazy. It
right.
was just, you know, and I thought about it later, and I'm like, wow. You know, I mean, those people wanted to hear gospel music. Now, if I had just been thinking that this is destroying my testimony, but, you know, mentally, I'm just...
Yeah, you were just messed up. You were confused.
I was messed up. Yeah, I was very messed
well,
up.
Well, the point about religion is a good one. A lot of women stay because they believe their religion is against divorce. Should
yeah.
they stay?
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't feel like mine was against divorce. But, you know, I just was always the type that I believed God could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I know that God is able to fix any situation, but God can't fix people that don't want to be fixed.
Right.
People have to make their own choices, and we live our lives by the choices we make, and those choices are not only going to affect us, they're going to affect everybody who loves us. And that's the bad thing about it. When you make a choice like that, it not only destroys you, it destroys your family. And it's and you live with the consequences the
right.
rest of your life. You know, you live with them. So
to a woman who thinks that maybe they should stay because her religion is against divorce, what would you tell her?
No. That God does not condone abuse. I mean, God does not expect a woman to sit there and take physical abuse. Now, if you don't want a divorce, at least separate yourself and go to a better women's shelter. Get somewhere else. Get your children out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you spend time in prayer and give God ample time to change that man if he's going to change. You know, but don't ever stay and put yourself and your children's lives in danger because of a piece of paper. I mean, it's a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
God blesses relationships that he's in. Lots of times we make the choices, and we're not the ones who... God didn't choose that person for us. We got in a hurry. We chose that person. And that's where I made my mistake. I didn't let God choose my person for me. I didn't let God choose my husband. I chose him. So I got in a hurry to fulfill those dreams in my life, to be a housewife and a mother. And now here I am. I've got one child. He calls somebody else mama. And I've been pregnant 5 times. I've lost 3 children to miscarriages. My son was murdered, and the only son I have now calls somebody else mama. So I've never raised a child past 6 years old, and it's very, very difficult because that was my dream, to be that housewife and that mother. I'll never see that dream. Now I do. My son and I now have a wonderful relationship, and I'm thankful for that. God brought him back into my life. But it's been a lot of long, hard, painful roads to go through to get there. And you know, I don't want to see any woman have to face the pain that I faced, because I almost went crazy several times. I almost lost my mind. But God just took me and he held me and he cradled me in his arms. And he did not let me go crazy.
Yeah.
I looked in the mirror one day and I saw my life falling apart. And I said, God, I can't be a witness for you. I can't share with people what you've done for me. And I can't tell them how you brought me through this if I go crazy. And I need you to heal me right now. My head felt like it weighed 10,000 pounds. My brain was so heavy, and I was a nervous wreck. I was putting milk in the cabinet and dish rags in the refrigerator, and I knew I was falling apart. Went into my den. I sat there for about 5 minutes after I asked God to heal me, and I just felt the hand of God touch me, and I felt that lift off of me. And although I was still very severely depressed, I knew I wasn't going crazy anymore. From that point on, I could tell I was beginning to slowly heal.
And, wow.
Yeah. And it was just awesome. And to show you how God works, that very day I had an appointment with my social worker, my counselor. I had an appointment with her. She called my daddy that day, and she said, Mr. Wagner, she said, we're going to try to get Yvonne on antidepressants today. And the psychiatrist was supposed to come and put me on antidepressants. I went that afternoon to see her, and he had a bout with cancer. He had to go in the hospital. He couldn't be there. She said, well, you know, she said, we'll call you just as soon as he's available, and, you know, we'll go ahead and put you on antidepressants. And I said, okay. 1 week later, after God had touched my mind, I went back for another counseling session. She said, Yvonne, you don't need any antidepressants, do you? I said, no, ma'am, I don't. But I've got the only antidepressant I need, and that's the Lord Jesus Christ.
Oh, wow, Yvonne, that's powerful.
So I never went on any antidepressants. I never went on any nerve pills. I solely depended on God to get me through all of those situations. And he's still carrying me today. My only prayer that Daddy prayed, the only prayer that Daddy could pray after I went to prison, with everything that we had gone through, Daddy said, Lord, I don't even know how to pray. He said, the only thing I can say is, just bring my daughter back to me, sound in mind, body, and spirit. And God did that for him.
Powerful, well, Yvonne. Powerful story of redemption. Thank you so much for taking the time to share the story and to write the book. There is help for people that are involved in abusive relationships. There's the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and that's staffed 24 hours a day. Their phone number is 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. So thank you so much for being with us today, Yvonne. Bless you with
welcome.
The book. Get the word out there to stop domestic violence.
I sure will. And, I just want everybody to know, you know, that no matter what you're going through, I mean, we have a God who loves us, and he's always there, no matter what. I mean, we can depend on him when we can't depend on anybody else. People will let us down, but God will never fail us, and he will never let us down.
Amen. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. God bless.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.